Welcome everybody to A Cast of the Past, where best friends get together to talk about old games in a new light and sometimes make definitive lists on video games. I'm Josh.
And I'm Darth Tom. Josh, what are we going to be talking about today?
Well, today we're talking about Star Wars, but a particular side of Star Wars. The Star Wars part of Star Wars.
Yes, we are going to be making a definitive tier list of Star Wars vehicular combat games. And, it's a pretty specific list.
And when we talk about that, though, these are games that you spend the majority of your time inside of a vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
mm-hmm.
There are some where you're outside of it, but I think over 50% of the gameplay is actually done inside of the vehicle.
Right, exactly. And we're restricting this to console and PC only, because Lord knows there's tons of mobile and handheld games with Star Wars.
You can't say that, because you got arcade games on here.
Okay, that's true. But what is an arcade if not a giant console that you have to turn on?
Or a giant computer.
That you have to turn on with quarters.
That's true.
I mean, so let's get right into this. We are going to be covering titles from not just the arcades, but as early as the Atari game system era, all the way up through the modern day. And we've got 19 titles. So Josh, why don't we go to the earliest game on the list and just kick it off? We're going to have a nice little debate on each title, and then we'll rank it and move on.
So I believe the first game on the list is Star Wars the Arcade, which was covered in an episode of Jaeger's Retro Review, which is found on youtube.com/casttothepast.
Yes, the first episode of Jaeger's Retro Review.
So, Tom, what would you rank this? After my, you know, wonderful 3-minute or less review, you know, maybe, well, surely you should find this game maybe towards the top of the list.
Oh, I'm sorry, but I personally disagree. I have this ranked quite low in my opinion, and it's a pattern you're going to see in most of the arcade titles that we've provided. Don't get me wrong, I find this technically impressive for its time. I think that the graphics, you know, the vector-based 3D graphics are pretty dang impressive for an arcade title in the late 70s, and the actual use of audio clips from the film, just phenomenal. But it doesn't play that well. I've played this once in my life, to be honest with you, at an arcade in Wildwood, New Jersey. You know, they kind of had some classic titles. It's, in my opinion, it's a little rough. Historically admirable, I don't know. Where I would say, honestly, this is a D-tier game for me. But what would you think, Josh?
See, I would put an A. I would put an A? Because the sit-down arcade, you know, in the 80s, it was that feel of you are in the Star Wars. Like, it was unlike a lot of things that were in arcades at the time. It was a genre defining space shooter, where normally it was just a side scrolling shooter and stuff like that. This incorporated, you know, Star Wars. It incorporated space shooters, very similar to, like, I would say, like, Space Invaders and Defender and stuff like that. But it put it in a first person mechanic, very similar to Battlezone, where you were in the tank. It's all these things combined together to make a game that is one of the best licensed games, which is something that we've talked about in the past.
I appreciate your argument and, you know, the precedent that the game set. So I'll tell you what, I'll compromise by actually saying it's an F. No, I'm just kidding. How about for historical sake only, I will agree to move it up to a B. Are you okay with that?
I will take a B on this one. Yeah, I'll take a B because I think things are going to go a little bit, things are going to get crazy, because if you think this is that low, I think some games on this list deserve to be lower than a D.
All right. Well, let's get into it, baby.
Okay.
So next up, 1982, we have The Empire Strikes Back on the Atari.
Yeah, so this is the Atari one. This is not going to be the arcade version, correct?
Just now, the Atari version is what we kind of curated for this.
Yeah. So yeah. This is bad. This is an F.
This is an F.
This is an F to me. I tried enjoying this a long time ago. I tried enjoying it more recently. It's just not good. So the next one on our list is Star Wars Return of the Jedi.
Yes, another Atari game. what do you think about this one? Another vehicle, another, you know, dedicated one kind of gimmick Star Wars game.
Yeah. So this, once again, I would probably put this as an F, which is sad because the arcade one's actually not too bad. And the thing is, the arcade for Empire Strikes Back isn't bad either. It's very similar to the vector graphics of the original one that we have on the list here. But yeah, for Return of the Jedi, it's just, I think it's the limitations of the console that really hurts it, I think, the most.
Yeah, when we were compiling choices and I was getting the images for this tier list, I almost accidentally gave you the image of the arcade promotional art. And I was like, oh, no, we chose Atari. And just like Empire, you know, it's not much better if there was any improvements in that 1 year development cycle between 82 and 83. Not great. Whatever. One trick pony. Next.
Yeah. So where are we going next, Tom? We're going into the 90s, right?
Yeah, we're skipping ahead a full decade to a pretty significant game, Star Wars X-Wing on the PC.
Yeah. Now,
Josh, did you have any early youth experience with this game?
Oh, yeah. I actually played all three of these.
Okay.
And
well, in order, we'll start with this one. What did you think?
I think the story is pretty fun. I think the gameplay to it was unlike a lot of things at the time, because it's a full Star Wars experience, like feeling like you're inside of a fleet.
I thought the first person combat, you know, from the cockpit was pretty impressive. You know, for a PC title from 1993, this was really something, I gotta say. I did not play this as a child because we didn't have a computer. Even when we did get a computer in 2000, wasn't allowed to play PC games. But this is another, like, for this episode research project. I just gotta say, I was very impressed by it. I enjoyed this a lot. But, you know, it does show its age in certain arenas in terms of, like, controls and draw distance, you know, the way that certain elements load on the screen compared to others. So I'm just going to say a B, you know, and it's like another historically significant B, in my opinion.
So we talked about X-Wing. However, at a couple years later, I think, or around the same time.
1 year later, actually. Yeah.
Star Wars TIE Fighter comes out. Now, very similar to X-Wing, however, you're playing on the bad guys, which is a point in the right direction. It's a positive point that we're going to get there, that, hey, it's a game where you play as the bad guys. Unheard of, really, in the 90s, you know, early 90s. But it wasn't, I don't think it stuck the landing as much as playing as the Rebels. And it's cool flying the, you know, the bombers and stuff like that and the TIE fighters. But I don't think the story really was as, like, Star Wars. I mean, it is Star Wars, but it just didn't have a lot of charm that the first one did. Right. I would give it a C.
C is also where I would put it. I would agree with you. Here's the thing, and this goes through all Star Wars games. I honestly think playing as the Imperial side of any vehicle combat game, it's just not always as fun, because TIE fighters, you know, despite having a distinctive sound, you know, that roar of the engine, and some really interesting models between their functions, they're so uniform in a way where it's not very fun, because it feels like you're piloting the same ship most of the time. You know, in all of the franchises, you know, the good guys have broader ship designs. So when you're flying a ship of a different class, it really feels different. So TIE Fighter, it's a game where you're only allowed to do Empire stuff. And it's like, you know, which ship that goes, am I flying right now? You know what I mean?
Now, can we all agree, though, the TIE Interceptor is the coolest looking of those ships?
In my opinion, the best ever TIE fighter model is Kylo Ren's TIE Silencer from The Last Jedi, because it takes the Interceptor concept, but kind of makes it sleeker. And just like the way it's used in that dogfight in the movie, it looks like it's just far more powerful. That's a Lego set I'm dying to get my hands on, but it's out of production.
If so, only it wasn't tied to a really crappy movie. But
well, it's not tied to a crappy movie.
At the
it's
same
tied
time
to, like,
that
one of the best movies.
The same time that Star Wars X-Wing comes out, we also had a little hit that came out on the Sega Saturn called Star Wars Rebel Assault. And Tom, yes. Do you have any history with Star Wars Rebel Assault?
Zero, except for the research I could do on this episode. What about you?
So, not too much history with the first one, but I remember playing the crap out of the second one. And was it groundbreaking in CG inside of games? No.
I don't think so. It
gave us some of like the first that I memories of what I can remember of actual full-fledged rendered figures working in CG in a story-driven game that was kind of, it reminded me a lot of Time Crisis, but also reminded me a lot of just kind of like a flying simulator where move to the left of the screen, move to the right of the screen, shoot this ship. Like, and it was very repetitive in its patterns. I would probably put this at a D or an F.
I gave it a C just for, you know, what it was doing at the time. And I'm just going to be straight up. This is one that I couldn't get my hands on an emulation or a game of in time for the episode. Whatever, it's our show. I can pretend I played a game. Shut up. But yeah, it looked interesting and it looked like it was following in the spirit, even though it wasn't on the PC. You know, it was trying its best to be a console version of the flight simulator experiences that X-Wing and TIE Fighter are providing.
Trying to do it to a console version. Yeah.
I wouldn't fuss at a D, I guess. Or maybe I just don't have any strong opinions on this one. So Josh, wherever the game lands, whatever, I'm fine. Right. I didn't actually play it. So I'm kind of cheating.
I'll put it at a D. All right.
First game to get the D.
So next game on our list here is X-Wing versus TIE Fighter. And this came out in 1997, if I'm not mistaken, Tom.
It did.
Okay. So some weird things about this game is, number one, it required a flight stick in order to play it.
It did. Yeah.
Which, I mean, yeah, in the 90s, like if you had a PC, you probably had like Microsoft Flight Simulator or some sort of space game. So you probably had a joystick sitting around that had the weird suction cups that you'd put on your table and to move it around and stuff like that. That always popped off in the middle of playing.
I mean, any old kind of Gen X era gamers who can help us out here. I feel like my older cousins always had some type of joystick that at least did the job for these kinds of PC games. So there's probably something there that was compatible for people who wanted to play this game.
Now, this game did have a campaign to it, and I don't remember too much of the campaign, but I do remember that there was multiplayer to it. And that was kind of like, whoa, like a Star Wars game with X-Wings and TIE Fighters online that you can play with people. But like in 1997, like there wasn't really, not that I can think of, without doing like LAN party stuff.
I guess if you were like the rich kid with 256k dial-up or something. I mean,
what year did Richie Rich come out?
1994, I think. I will stand that movie for days.
Oh, that's a good movie. He has McDonald's in his house. Movie,
right? You deserve a break today. But anyway, getting off topic. Yeah, this multiplayer was pretty big at the time. You know, 8-player multiplayer matches online, and I presume locally via LAN if you were going to drag your chunky computer over to a friend's house with 8 people. Same people do it in the modern day, so I assume they did it back then.
Yeah.
And there was a campaign for both the Rebels and the Empire. So pretty significant, in my opinion. And then also, you know, this kind of became the framework for a lot of titles that are going to come up on this list. You know, I remember the development of many a title, including the Rogue Squadron series. You know, they always talk about getting back to what that game did, capturing what that game did. So this is like significant, not just in what it was, but what it inspired for me. Now, remind me real quick, did you mention what rank you would give this?
No, I did not. So that's what I was thinking. Like, so
I'm thinking you're going to give it much lower than I am.
So you got to look at it from, it is revolutionary when it comes to the gameplay of people playing together, multiplayer size. But I think it loses pieces, though. It loses points because you have to have a required accessory in order to play it.
Okay, that's fair.
I would put this either at a C or a B.
How about we settle on a B? Because I'm giving this major props just because of what it kind of meant.
Okay, so it'll go I
originally had this at an A until you made the joystick argument, which is a very good argument, you know, because it's kind of gatekeeper-y.
Right.
I know this has kind of been re-released, and I don't know if the re-release has done away with the joystick requirement. If you know, please yell at us in the comments for not being prepped on that one. But
These are games from 20 plus years ago. Like, leave us alone.
Well, moving on to another game from like 20-ish plus years ago, we have a sequel to Rebel Assault, Star Wars Rebel Assault 2, The Hidden Empire, which not only was on the PC, it saw a PlayStation release as well.
Yeah. So one known thing about the front of this. Look at that. Look at that artwork. You see what that is, Tom? Yeah. That's the Millennium Falcon. How are you into Millennium Falcon? What?
Oh, my gosh. You're
flying through asteroid fields? That's awesome.
Flying with that piece of trash? Oh, my gosh.
So I remember playing the crap out of this game on the PlayStation 1. And I remember playing it on the PC. So one thing they did differently with Rebel Assault 2 was they used live actors rather than like cartoon CG.
So it was like FMV, full motion video cutscenes.
Yeah, but they also used it in some of the shootout stuff. And the shootout stuff in this game was very similar to, like, it kind of looked like Time Crisis almost, where it's like you're against the wall and then you peek out around and shoot, and then you get back against the wall and you peek out around and shoot. And is the gameplay is very similar to Rebel Assault 1. I think they've changed a lot of things in this game and made it a little bit more of an enjoyable Star Wars story to maybe justify it moving up to a C.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. I don't know. I gave this a D just because I felt like in what I did play of it, the combat in the vehicles was kind of unmemorable. Like you said, it was repetitive in a way where, like, nothing really sparked any amount of wow, because I had already been playing X-Wing and TIE Fighter and X-Wing versus TIE Fighter just for comparison's sake. So,
yeah,
you know, like, I gave this a D personally.
I'm fine with giving it a D.
Fine.
Putting them next to each other.
Yeah, keep the series together so they don't get separated. But we're into a big heavy hitter up next. Josh, do you want to tell them what it is?
Is this going to be Star Wars Rogue Squadron for the N64?
Yes. This was my first ever Star Wars game, combat game that I owned, I guess technically. That's the asterisk, that I owned. I love it.
I think this is a lot of people's introduction, like, our age, I think, to a lot of Star Wars vehicular stuff. Mm-hmm. Where, like, when this came out, we were probably 10, 11-ish. Like, we were getting around that thing where we can finally, like, comprehend how to play a game like this. Because, like, granted, like, when X-Wing and TIE Fighter came out at the time, I was 5. Like,
sure.
Do I think I know how to use a keyboard and stuff like that to play a game like that? Like, no. Like
wow, this... the alphabet.
Right. And it's not in order.
Yeah.
This though, Star Wars Rogue Squadron, compelling story, has our boy Wedge Antilles in it, one of the best Star Wars characters. You get to do the Death Star Trench. You get to do the Battle of Hoth. You get to do, I think, the other Death Star. No. Yeah?
I don't think it gets that far, if I remember correctly. But you do get to do, like, a handful of really cool original planets. I remember there is a level where you have to bomb an Imperial train using Y-Wings. There's a level where you have to fly kind of, like, really low and quiet through, you know, like, an Imperial base. There's an episode where an Imperial TIE Fighter pilot defects to the Rebellion. You know, there's good drama in there. And there's, you know, characters who you never see physically, but, like, just through their intercom conversations, they come out pretty compelling. Now, this is a little rough playing it again after a while, because, you know, it's on an N64 controller, a controller I defend, but will admit it's kind of cursed in some ways. And I do have to say, I am impressed with what this game was able to pull off in terms of the scale of combat on an N64. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, I think Factor 5 did a really good job of, like, having lots of enemies on screen at the same time and big wide arenas for you to fight in. I was impressed with it.
I was impressed with what it could do. However, I think the controls to it were a little too clunky.
Okay.
And is a knock at the N64 controller? I don't think so. I think it's overall the stiffness of how everything was on that console. And I think having it on that console hindered it a little bit.
Now, so, I know this came out on the PC as well. Didn't play it then, didn't play it for this. I wanted to stick to what I was familiar with to see how I felt now.
Yeah, I have it on the PC. I tried it once, and it was like, whoa. Like, it's a huge graphic, not a graphical update, but, like, it just felt smoother almost. And it's like,
okay,
is this what I was expecting, like, from the N64 one? Because you get into the N64 one, and it's just like, it's like playing Smash Brothers 1 after playing Melee. You know what I mean? Like, there's just a huge difference in the way that everything feels. It almost feels like the N64 stuff is very heavy compared to the GameCube stuff, which is very light and very smooth and very fast.
I 100% see you there. So, Josh, honestly, I had this in my A tier, but you make some compelling arguments of why I think it deserves, you think it's all the way down in C.
Yeah, C. I think it's a C.
I mean, but can we talk, you know, we're talking about vehicular combat games. Can I just say the array of available vehicles in this game is so impressive. You have the entirety of, you know, the expected iconic rebel ships plus the Millennium Falcon. And then, like, what I think is still cool to this day is that they buried the Naboo Starfighter as an unlockable ship in this game a full year before Episode 1 came out, and you didn't get to, like, they kept the code really secret. And unless you had the skill and the wherewithal to figure it out, like, this was like a whole year later, and it's like, oh, I can come back to this game and play as a whole other thing. I was just personally wowed by that. But
listen, there's no way this is an A when you have two follow-ups that are going to blow it out of the water.
Well, then I'm going to stand very hard that this gets a B at least. I think a C is too mean.
C is too mean?
Too mean.
Oh, man. Well, then I'll put it at a B for right now. We can go through and we can reevaluate these at the end, see if there's anything that we build a case to move something in a different point if we need to.
Thank you.
So where are we going after Star Wars Rogue Squadron, Tom? We're leaving the N64, hopefully, right?
We're not just leaving the N64. We're leaving the house, Josh.
Oh, no.
Because we're going back to the arcade.
Oh, man.
For Star Wars Trilogy Arcade. Now, this is a game that I think, if you've been within an arcade within the last 20 years, if there's any left, I think you have to have seen this. It's a big, ornate cabinet with kind of like a white and black and blue light rimmed aesthetic. And it's a joystick-based control game because it cycles between vehicle combat and lightsaber duels, where in the vehicle, you're steering the ship, and when you're fighting with a lightsaber, it's your lightsaber.
And there's shooting mechanics, too. There's shooting levels. Yeah.
And it's clunky as all hell. And I despise this game. I despise this game because I personally think it's got the kind of bullcrap arcade logic where I think it's too hard. It's too hard to master and too hard to get down quick enough before you're doing really badly and you got to pump more quarters into it to survive. The curve, I just remember when I was a kid, I just thought it was unforgiving and unkind. And I was never into it. I put it as a D on my list just because I was being nice about that. Graphically, it's kind of pretty, but I don't know. Josh, what about you?
So if you're going to play this in the arcades, make sure you find a sit-down one because the standing one is just way too difficult.
Oh, I've never seen a sit-down one. I've only ever seen a standing one.
Oh, my God. No, yeah. There's a sit-down one. It's actually at the Hershey Park Arcade. And it's awesome.
When the world reopens.
It is an awesome. It looks like a giant like throne chair almost that you sit in. And it's so relaxing and stuff. So I have this at an A.
Whoa.
It almost would be an S, but the only thing that's a downside to this game is it's always in inverted, which I play all my games inverted. Vertical control schemes. But they use the flight mechanics, the flight controls, which are normally inverted, to do your shooting mechanics and your lightsaber duels. So when it says to press down on your lightsaber duels, you're actually pressing forward. And then when you're trying to block it, you have to remember that you're doing everything in reverse. Or when somebody's shooting you in the top left corner, you actually have to go bottom left in order to shoot them in the top. And it's very difficult to wrap your brain around. And that might be why it's so difficult for some people. I've beaten this game multiple times. And I think normally when this machine came out, it was like a dollar or so to play. Maybe took like $5-6 to beat the game total. Because like when you get to the final battle of the Death Star Part 2, it amps itself up pretty hard. But then now you can find the machine 25, 50 cents a pop, sit down with like $1.50 and beat the game no problem. It's awesome because you relive the Death Star Trench. You relive the Battle of Hoth. You go and fight Wampas in Hoth. You go and do the battle on Endor. Then you go up into space on Endor. You fight Boba Fett. You fight Darth Vader. Like, there's so many awesome things in this game. And having to sit down there as you're flying with the joystick and you have the button that you can press that shoots the torpedoes or calls your friends in to shoot up other ships, it's almost like an arcade version of Star Fox in first person mode.
Highest I'll go is C.
I still
think this game has a terrible curve. That's meant to sucker money out of you.
It's an arcade game. They all are supposed to do that.
This one did it the most, and I dislike it.
I'm putting it at C, but I know it's going higher.
C. No.
It's definitely going higher.
We'll see about that.
We'll see about that.
Ah. Well, Josh, maybe moving on to more pleasant pastures. What do we got next? The final game in this series, I believe.
That would be Star Wars X-Wing Alliance.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't remember too much of this one. I remember playing it, but I don't remember too much of it. It's going to be difficult for me to rank this one. And I know a lot of people are going to be like, how dare you? Blah, 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 blah. I mean, sorry. We're not perfect. We can't play every single Star Wars game that came out. You think I played Star Wars Jedi Power Battles for the Dreamcast? No.
Did anyone play that game?
I don't think they did.
This is a C for me.
Okay.
it just looks like more X-Wing, you know? And it's like, okay, but four games in, it didn't look like it was advancing the formula anymore, mm-hmm. especially after X-Wing and TIE Fighter made such a definitive statement. So yeah, just C, you know, like, it's fine. You want more? Good. Here's more. But I don't think this is that essential.
So Tom, do you want to go to the N64, or do you want to go to the Dreamcast?
I want to go to the N64 because what we had next was a, you know, spiritual sequel to a game we just talked about, but in my opinion, not as good of one. It was Star Wars Episode One: Battle for Naboo, the Factor 5 follow-up from Rogue Squadron. This one themed entirely around Episode One ships and battles and locations. And yeah, this one, it just felt like they were asked to pump it out really quick to tie into the release of Episode One. And so I just feel it lacks like a little bit of the polish, a little bit of the wow factor. And there's just not as many available ships. You know what I mean? It's kind of disappointing for me. A couple cool unlockables here and there, but I don't know. This one's pretty perfunctory for me. I'd give this one a C.
I was going to give it a D just because it wasn't really... It was a cash grab at Episode One, right? And in our license game, I talk about all the Episode One games that came out. And like, this is probably the weakest of the three big Episode One games that came out.
I wouldn't object. You know, like, it's just not very compelling when you could just play Rogue Squadron, have a Naboo Starfighter, and then have so many more like better levels and vehicle selection. Yeah, this is just...
To the point, though, you play the final mission of the game, which is the final space battle of Episode One, and you're not even inside like the Trade Federation ship. It's just like, oh, it looks like a ship's coming out of the blast thing, the escape port. And it's like,
you get to play as an extra in the battle, not Anakin.
Yeah. And it's like, and that's exactly how playing this game made me feel. I felt like an extra. So it deserves a D.
I've sent it to the D. Well, Josh, we have a very unique game up next that I hope will, turn some things around. Do you want to tell us about it?
So Star Wars had its own version of Tekken, which we covered on the podcast.
Unfortunately.
But what if Star Wars had its own version of Twisted Metal?
Yeah. Its own version of WWE Crush Hour.
Star Wars Demolition.
Mm-hmm. Notably, while it did have a PlayStation release, I think this is the highest profile Dreamcast game on this list, maybe?
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know what that says, but, you know, it did.
It looked good.
I think this game was too goofy, too, I don't know. Like, I'm not saying every game needs to be this 100% authentic flight simulator, but this went too far in the other direction for me. And I just, I don't know, I couldn't get into it.
Yeah, I mean, when we talk about, Star Wars combat video games, though, this... I mean, it hits all of those aspects.
Because you do get a great variety of land vehicles, I should mention. You know, it's not just spaceships. So, I mean, sure.
I would say a D. It's not terrible. It's not terrible.
Like, D's where I put it. For Demolition.
Yeah, it's one of those things, like, you could go back. You could play this, you know, on a fun, like, hey, take a look at this game. Did you know that this existed? Like, it's one of those things you can, it's... a cult classic game.
Hey, Dreamcast kids, if this was your Star Wars experience, I'm very happy for you. Just, I don't think it's the Star Wars experience I want, personally.
Jedi Power Battles was on the Dreamcast.
Maybe we have yet to see a re-release on the Switch. But Josh, we got one more game to get through before we get to what I think is like a golden streak coming up. And this one was... on the Xbox.
X gonna give Xbox. It to you. X gonna give you Star Wars Starfighter.
Yep. What an exciting name.
Yeah. It. I mean, pretty much was kind of a sequel to like Battle for Naboo.
Which is not a good thing for me. No. Yeah, I don't know. I again, this is super unmemorable. I think it takes, you know, like the prequel trilogy vehicle combat stuff only really got exciting once the prequel trilogy was done. And when you're still locked in this era, this is the year before Attack of the Clones comes out. The combat's fine. It's not bad, but it's not like super unique or engaging. It's like, you know, this is still when games are living in the shadow of Rogue Squadron. And I don't think it lives up. And it's on the Xbox, so it looks prettier, but this is a big meh for me.
If you were going to play a game around this time that was Star Wars related, I would recommend playing Star Wars Obi-Wan on the Xbox.
Okay.
That's
like, can you fly Obi-Wan through space?
No, you cannot. And that's why this gets a D as well. It gets put it right next to Battle for Naboo.
Keep them together. We don't separate siblings on these lists.
So,
all right.
Yeah. This is where I think we're going to have some, there's going to be hot takes coming up.
Oh, this is where it turns around.
Well, we might have some of the unfilled letters filled in, and we might not.
You're actually kind of starting to scare me. All right, but Josh, you're right, because 2001 saw another Star Wars vehicular combat game come out on another debuting system, the GameCube, and what was it?
That was Star Wars Rogue Leader.
Rogue Squadron Dos.
And... Rogue Squadron was good, but what if it was better?
Oh, absolutely.
Like, it's so good. Like, I can't say like so good so many times that it's like, you know, good. It's so good.
Like, here's the thing. Luigi's Mansion was like the debut first party console game for the GameCube. I would honestly call this the GameCube's initial killer app, like the reason you needed to get one on day one. This is a gorgeous game for the time. Like, I remember the one level where you're fighting the AT-ATs on a kind of ocean-based planet. The water physics, we know how much you love water physics.
Oh man, the water physics
on a GameCube game was phenomenal.
Oh, I mean, look at Wave Race. You know what I mean? When Wave Race came out, I was, wow.
That's why they call the game Blue the Dolphin. It did water well.
Wait, was it Blue?
Blue Storm, I think.
Possibly. Jet skiing game.
Yeah, I had that game.
But when the GameCube came out, right? Everyone talks about, oh, Luigi's Mansion. When the GameCube came out, I own two games. I owned Star Wars, Rogue Leader, Rogue Squadron 2, and Batman Vengeance. Those two games.
Okay. Can I just rave a little bit more? Because I feel like I didn't even get to give it its due credit. Sure. So, like, you know, again, we're talking about this game, this series already had great vehicle options. This one expands it even further. You get a lot more Empire ships in addition to Rebel ships that you can toy around with. You get like entire campaigns where you're playing as the Empire. There's one where you're Vader leading an attack on Yavin 4 post Death Star destruction, you know, bombing the crap out of the rebels as they're trying to escape. You get these unique new missions, like stuff set on Cloud City, stuff set on these unique new planets. And the combat, the squad combat controls are so great. Like, you can direct your squad mates to stay with you or to go off and, like, you know, give you cover.
Yeah.
It's just incredible. Incredible.
Yeah. And talking about it back with Rogue Squadron, it was so pretty, so smooth, controlled flawlessly. It wasn't heavy. It wasn't clunky. It felt like you were flying a ship normally.
It's terrific. Josh, this is an S from me.
I would say A.
Why is it not an S?
I hate escort missions, and I think it's a cheap way to get longevity out of a level. And there was multiple escort missions in this one. And I'm sorry. It's almost perfect. Like,
well, what I reminded you, this game has bonus features.
Oh my God.
There are unlockable behind the scenes documentaries that talk about, you know, Factor 5 rushing to make sure that a playable version of this was ready for Space World 2000 when they debuted the GameCube, talking about, you know, going to Skywalker Ranch and into Lucasfilm archives to make sure they got the ship designs as immaculate as they could. I mean, a game that is great and then shows you how the donuts are made. Give me that S. Just give it to me. Give it to me.
I can't give it you. I can't give you the S. I'll give you the A.
All right.
You the S.
I'm really disappointed, but I'll take the A. You say this is going places. All right.
I couldn't. There's too many escort missions.
There's too many escort missions.
All right, Watto. Fine. You and your dirty deals.
Oh, what is the next game?
Well, it's this game's direct sequel, Rogue Squadron 3, Rebel Strike, released in 2003, again for the GameCube. And here's my thing. This is the first, in my opinion, you know, like so many other threes in trilogies, like, you know, The Rise of Skywalker, this is a well-intended faceplant.
Why?
I did not really gel with this game's attempt to mix vehicular combat with on-foot stuff. I think that, you know, it brings you a couple new cool vehicle combat sections, but, you know, you're revisiting a lot of the same levels. We're doing Hoth again. We're doing this and this and that again. It really starts to lose a lot of its luster. You know, there's only so many times I can trip an AT-AT, you know, and things like that. Yeah. And I will say, like, the biggest saving grace of this game is that the entirety of Rogue Squadron 2 is available in co-op within this game. And that's pretty dang great. But is this enough to elevate this above 2? Not for me personally.
It is. It is. It's an S. This is an S.
No.
This is an S.
No, this is a B. All right, tell me why it's an S. Tell me why it's an S.
Because, well, I mean, you said Rogue Leader's an S, right? So if it's an S game inside of this game, shouldn't it be considered an S, right?
But you didn't agree that it was an S game.
No,
you
I said
there's
an
A game.
I said it's an A. So it's an A with apparently an S game built inside of it.
Talk about it. Talk about it without talking about the Rogue Squadron 2 element.
I love the missions in this game. I think majority of them were very well done. And it was a completely unique thing. And you played as Luke in this game. Right? I think you played as Luke in the first Rogue Squadron 2. Did you play?
Yeah, you did. A couple missions you were, because the Death Star trend, obviously. You
know. Yeah. But I know you played as Wedge sometimes. You played as another person as well. But the on-foot things were awesome too. Going to Dagobah, doing the trials of the Jedi with Yoda, like that's fun. That's enjoyable.
We're talking about vehicular combat. You can't drive Yoda.
We're talking about the game though. We're talking about the game. You said why is the game? And I think this is an S because of how good the game is. It perfected it from taking all the best parts of the previous two games and putting them together and gave you the entire second game in a co-op fashion. How many games do you know is just like, you know what? We'll give you the previous game and you'll be able to play it with a friend. Like, no game does that.
I'll give it an A. I'm not going to budge on that one. Just as you kept my baby from going to S, I will keep your baby from going to S.
Okay.
A is best I can do is A.
The best you can do is A.
All right. So Josh and I are at a very thorny impasse here as we move on to the next game.
Here we go. Well,
what is it, Josh?
Well, it's Star Wars Battlefront 2.
Specify the year so people don't get mad.
Was it 2005, right?
It was, yeah, the original Battlefront 2. Go ahead.
I don't like this game.
What?
I don't like this game. I'm sorry. It's not
okay,
fun.
Go ahead.
It's not fun.
You don't... Yeah.
There was like the squad-based stuff for this, the way that it controls third person, there's just too many better games out there. I remember playing the first one and I was like, I don't like this. And I remember playing the second one, and the big thing of the second one was you can play as Jedis in the story mode. And I was like, okay, well, let me go kill the younglings. Couldn't kill the younglings. So I was like,
it's all you wanted.
It's all I wanted.
Okay, but what did you not enjoy the enhanced and added vehicle sections? Because we you know, you asked me why isn't Battlefront 1 on this, and I was like, because the vehicles aren't really much more than just like a added bonus to the ground sections. But in the second game, the vehicles got their own dedicated space and mechanics and, you know, just strategy to it. Did you not enjoy any of that?
No, I didn't. Mm-hmm. I don't. And I think the reason that I don't like this game so much is probably 80 to 85% of this game relies on multiplayer.
Okay.
And
okay. I mean, it does in a way, yes.
And I didn't enjoy it. I never enjoyed this game, and I don't understand the hype and fascination that people have with it. What? Explain to me why this is a good game.
Well, here's some hype and fascination. It's because, you know, like the great game Halo 3 ODST, this game...
That's the worst Halo game!
This game... allows, like, you know, it's a game that takes a step back from being, you know, the badass unstoppable superhero protagonists of the series, and it puts you like as just a regular boots on the ground guy, and your adventures come from what you make of it. Now, like, yes, this is a game that my better memories of it are had in multiplayer sessions with friends, but I put a lot of time into this like single player too, just because you can attack each level in a unique way, or if you have like your own kind of sequence down, you can work on perfecting it every time. And I think the most interesting part of that came out of the space battles they did, where, you know, you can dogfight or you can, you know, craft your own strategies to disable the enemy's command ships, whether it's Star Destroyers or the Rebel, you know, command ships. You can, you know, knock them out externally by just bombarding the special components with bombs, or you could fly inside and try your best to kind of like fight your way through the enemy fighters and destroy the ship from the inside. And, you know, it's always, in my opinion, exciting and just filled with stuff to do. And, you know, for a time that this was not, I don't, not that like, I think this was maybe as well crafted and polished as Rogue Squadron 2, but I mean, this was a lot for me. This was pretty dang good for me.
See, though, the first half of your you know, rebuttal there, Tom, was talking about the on-foot stuff. And isn't it weird that you talked about that with Rebel Strike? And that you put that at an A.
You can operate vehicles on foot. I should have specified. You can operate AATs from the prequels. You can operate ATTs, speeder bikes, ATSTs, swoop bikes, those snail tank things from episode 5 on Kashyyyk, the weird looking things. There's a lot of options for vehicular destruction within the on-foot battles too. So it's not just confined to space. This is a game that, got the ground game down too. So C. Where are we at? What C? No. This was an A for me. So what are we doing here? Dad?
I don't want to budge from C.
This is not a C. We will get murdered in the comments.
You guys can murder me all you want in the comments. I know it's a terrible game. I would put it lower if I could.
Oh, give it a B, please. A B for Battlefront.
Okay. I'll give you a B. Okay. I'll give you a B. All right. I don't like putting it here, but I'll give you a B.
Thank you. All right. Hopefully this next one can cool some jets. It's the second to last one on our list here. What's next, Josh?
We're going to the arcades.
Going back to the arcades one more time.
One more time. Third time's a charm. Star Wars Battle Pod.
Mm-hmm.
What's your experience with this?
This is a Dave & Buster's exclusive title still, I believe. Or when I played it, it's when it had debuted at Dave & Buster's as an exclusive.
I think it is available outside of them now.
But this is a sit-down, very immersive arcade experience. It's almost like, an IMAX arcade game, because you sit in this pod and the screen wraps around you and you've got like it's flight sticks, but they're down at your sides, and you're like, you're kind of like piloting in a more immersive, realistic fashion, and it's fast and loud.
Yeah. And for someone who suffers from vertigo, it's not ideal.
Did you play this at your bachelor party? Because we went to a Dave & Buster's.
I did not play it there. Okay. I did play it. We did like a work thing, and we went to like a Dave & Buster's type place. And I played it. I was like, well, I'm not playing that ever again. which sucks, because it was so fun. It was fun. And that's the best thing I can say about this game. I'd probably put this at a B, just because it was enjoyable, but I can't go back and play it again.
Here's the thing. I agree, but I agree in a bit more of a negative sense. Just like, this is overwhelming, and it is in a way where I don't want to try to go back and master it. Also, just because it was an expensive game, like Dave & Buster's, I think it was
$250.
I think this was $3. I thought this was a $3 game, and I wasn't going to pump that much money, because a lot of Dave & Buster's games, they're cool, but overpriced, in my opinion. And it's just like, yeah, man, this is, it was so much that just doing the episode 4 Death Star level, I was like, all right, I need a break from this game.
It is an experience. I will say that. It's an experience.
Yeah.
If you've never done it before, definitely go and try it out, because you'll walk away thinking either that was amazing, and if you felt like you were there, or B, that was Star Wars overload almost. You actually look like you would come out of the Star Wars.
I'm going to say a C, just because, it's mid, complete mid for me, just because of how overwhelming it is. It's like, that was great, but I never want to do it again,
So you're going to put this on the same level as the Star Wars trilogy.
I conceded the Star Wars trilogy up to C. So I guess I'm, this is the one where I'm arguing it should be knocked down at least a bit. Star Wars Trilogy Arcade was lower when I originally...
Right. Star Wars Battle Pod is a C.
It's a C. So we're done in the arcades. We got to go back one more time.
One last time.
A bit more of a modern.
To one of the most controversial Star Wars games made.
Of all time. One of the most controversial games of the decade.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going back to Star Wars Battlefront 2.
EA's 2017 sequel to their 2015 reboot of Battlefront. And once again, this is an example where it's like, why not the first one? And again, it's because the vehicle sections in the first one, were not like polished enough or standalone enough in our opinion to really say you should play them. But this one, they a little bit of extra effort. So Josh, have you played Battlefront 2?
I have. I've played it a lot after they fixed a lot of things to it.
Yes, I came to it later also.
My problem with the game is the same problem that I have with Battlefield. I get in there, I can't see anybody, and I'm dead.
Okay.
I get in there, I can't see anybody, I'm dead. Oh, hey, look, they're just Darth Maul destroying my entire team three times. Okay. Like,
so you got some spawn problems is what you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah. It looks beautiful. It makes me feel like I am playing a Star Wars game on the battlefield of Star Wars. I don't think the vehicle mechanics in the game are enough to justify this as a top tier Star Wars game. The very little that you get to play as, because you don't get to do the vehicle as much unless you build up enough points or kill enough people. And that's the thing. You need to be able to be really good at the game in order to use those ships.
Well, have you played the campaign?
No.
Okay.
Sorry. Well, I played a multiplayer game for some reason for the multiplayer side of it.
And you hate multiplayer.
I know. No. I know.
I'm just going to say, in its defense, the campaign is where I think the vehicle sections really do shine. And it's a campaign that's focused, you know, on Inferno Squadron, an actual group of dedicated, you know, soldiers and pilots. So the vehicle sections within the campaign are really good, really well designed, and just, I think, a delight. And that is kind of what, you know, you said you have to have that prerequisite skill. I think taking the time to do the campaign gives you an appreciation for operating the vehicles in the multiplayer section. But the campaign is like this very long stretching time period piece where you start with Empire ships and you do missions dedicated to that in these big battlefields, or sometimes in like these scattered, you literally play a mission in the scattered debris of the destruction of the second Death Star, where you have to, like, you know, help Imperial ships escape while dodging debris. It's very cool. And then, you know, later you're playing in the Resistance era with, you know, the new X-Wings. You're fighting space pirates who are using Naboo starfighters and like Clone War era tech as their ships, because like they've stole them and repurposed them from like over the years. So I think it's a very cool vehicular combat experience. And, you know, even like on the ground stuff, when you're in multiplayer, you know, you can hop into the same, you know, swath of vehicles I mentioned you could use in Battlefront 2 2005. So, I don't know, I give this game a lot of credit because it was relentlessly and justifiably pooped on when it came out. But they, in my opinion, really turned this one around into something unique.
For the redemption story that this game has, I would go B. Or A. I can see it in both categories.
B's where I had it. I kind of want to despitefully demand an S, but
no,
I know. I'd be a clown if I did that. B, I'm totally comfortable with a B. That's where I had it.
So, all right. This is the ranking right now. Let's try to dive in really quick though. Anything that should be changed on this list?
Well, Rogue Squadron 2 should be a nest tier game.
And so should 3. 3. If 2 is an S, 2 is inside of 3, which deserves then to be an S.
But 3 betrays so much of the spirit of the Rogue Squadron series by
having... So you're
almost
saying like a story of Star Wars that's just completely ruins a franchise... That's so bad.
I'm not talking about Attack of the Clones.
It's like an eighth installment of the series that's just hurts everybody around them.
Attack of the Clones, because it was A New Hope, Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi, the two Ewok movies, Phantom Menace. Hang on. I'll find a seventh thing to cram in there. But yeah, I'm not talking about Attack of the Clones, Josh. I'm talking about how Rebel Strike decided it needed to go on foot, and it never did because it was always great in the air. And that's why I can't give that an S. So if we're not going to budge on these, they can both stay at A. I mean, sure, they can both stay at A. I think they rightfully sit up there because Factor 5 made some of the highest effort Star Wars games, and I won't deny that.
So there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. The what?
You don't think anything else should change?
No.
Oh, not really? Not at all?
I mean, Star Wars Trilogy Arcade should go up a little bit higher.
Okay. All right. I think it's fair.
But you don't want it. You don't want it up there.
I'll tell you what. I'll tell you what. Let's have a fun little game here. Let's have a fun little game.
Okay.
You can move. I'll let you go first. You can move any one game up one rank, and I will not poo-poo it. But then you also have to allow me to move any one game on the list up one rank. So you got to think very carefully about this one.
Okay, I got it.
Okay. Ooh. Okay, so you want to just explain to everybody what your justification was?
From the beginning, Star Wars Arcade is one of the best arcade games ever. Coming out in the early 80s and still being a go-to game. Oh, and what's so awesome about Star Wars Arcade, Tom, that it was included on the Rebel Strike demo disc, that you could play it on your GameCube because it was so damn awesome.
Okay, I said I wouldn't poo-poo it. That's 100% your pick. All right, so now take Empire Strikes Back on the Atari and put it all the way up in the S spot. I would say, personally, I really would like to nominate Battlefront 2.05 to go up to an A. I think this is
you're not gonna move Rogue Leader.
No, because I feel like we're at too much of an impasse here. And I feel like I sincerely do personally love Battlefront 2 more than Rogue Leader. Even while I will go ahead and acknowledge it is not as good as Rogue Leader in its polish and its singular vision. But again, just for me personally, and I think a lot of fans out there would say, Battlefront 2 has had like such longevity because of the kind of fantasy fulfillment experiences you get out of Star Wars with it.
Well, there you have it, people. The
almost kind of uniform cluster here with a couple of exceptions.
Yeah. The Cast in a Past Star Wars Combat Video Game tier. So let us know in the comments what you think. What should be moved up? What should be moved down? What should be considered an S tier game? Because apparently we can't come to terms of what is an S tier game on this list.
Well, you know what? Maybe that's not a bad thing because it will leave room for Squadrons to maybe impress us. Maybe that's the ST game we're not ready for, Josh.
That's true. I'm not sure if I am ready for Squadrons. But Squadrons is going to be coming out here in the next couple days. Let us know what you think of it. Let us know what you think of these games. And until next time, this has been Josh.
And Tom.
And we'll see you in the future. Well, that's all the time that we can spend in the past. So thanks for listening. Subscribe to A Cast of the Past on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. And stay up to date with the Cast of the Past by making sure you follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. There you can be the first to know when new episodes drop, as well as joining in on discussions on all things gaming. And until next time, we'll see you in the future.